Hello, I am Joshua P. Warren, and this is Joshua P. Warren Daily. Well, I received a fascinating email regarding a subject that actually Mobius and I have discussed in the past, and it was really interesting to have this particular take on it. I received this from a man who lives in the United States. I will not use his name without his explicit permission to protect his privacy. But he wrote to me in a couple of different emails, "I have found that certain types of spacecraft distort space-time." He goes on to explain that he has had, on a number of occasions, these UFOs over his house, and he doesn't like it. He describes them as unwanted. And so he says, after having a number of unwanted visits here at night, the very next day, Chinook choppers showed up. Now, let me pause to say the Chinooks, these are the big helicopters that are long with two different rotors on the top. He says those monsters would hover about 20 minutes and rattle windows. Our home is just 30 years old. My take on that? They were reading propulsion system signatures. Each drive system would have a certain fingerprint as to the type of vehicle, and this will tell them which race came to visit the night before. Okay, so I'm going to pause again here. So what he is saying is that we are living within this medium called space-time, and that when these craft come, they are distorting space-time and gravity in order to travel the way they travel. And in doing so, they sort of leave behind ripples, similar to the ripples that a submarine might leave behind as it travels through the ocean. And those ripples are kind of like, well, a signature or a fingerprint that could be used to identify that particular craft. And so these government agencies or whatever, they may not be able to show up right when the UFO is there and see what it is, but they know they have at least some kind of a window of time in which they can show up and sort of scan the area and see if they can figure out what kind of craft was there and who's been visiting Earth. It's sort of like detectives going out into a field and looking at the tire tracks to see what kind of vehicle was traveling across the unauthorized property, you know. And then the tracks are not going to be there forever. They'll be there until the wind blows them away or the rain comes. But for a while, you have something left behind. So he goes on here to say, "One night I was outside with an infrared scope. I happened to point the scope toward the back of our car, and blam! There was a flash of light off the back window. That window was angled about 45 degrees, and living in the country, there is no other light source. It could only have come from orbit. I think the feds are quietly scanning either the entire country from orbit or just specific areas looking for activity of spacecraft. An orbiting laser scanner would provide great resolution and infrared images. This fed into computers with image recognition software could easily project onto a wall a real-time map showing all of the UFO activity for them." So, you know, what an interesting point he's making, right? That if space-time indeed is malleable as we know it is, and these craft are coming in and they're causing these ripples and distortions that are going to last for a while, then there are agencies that might specialize in coming in and taking a look at that. And maybe, that's part of what the president's new space force is involved with as well, keeping an eye on these interactions we have with these craft that come in from space. And who knows whether they can be authorized or if they're just all, you know, weird trespasses and intrusions. But regardless, an interesting idea. Well, that said, and I thank that gentleman for his email, I want to switch to a story that might bring even more credibility and clarity to this issue. This is a news story, and actually came from a blog that involves a lot of information from a news story and New Scientist. It was sent to me by Lauren, and it comes from buildingblog.com, BLDGBLOG, buildingblog.com. Very thorough piece written by a man named Jeff Manal. And the headline is Glitches in Space-Time, Frozen into the Built Environment. So the author of this piece says that he and another journalist, another writer, got the special opportunity to take a tour at the Schriever Air Force Base in Colorado. Now, Schriever Air Force Base is where they have a staff. They call themselves the Masters of Space, and that's because they operate the GPS system, the Global Positioning System. Now, we're talking about the system that supplies navigational information for everything from smartphones to cars to construction equipment and even to intercontinental missiles. So this is a very highly secure spot. It was a big deal for this guy and his friend to get to go there. They had to go through a lot of clearance processes for this interview, background checks, physical checks when they got there. The whole time they were there, there was a red light blinking in every room to remind everyone that there were civilians around, and you know, there was a whole protocol with how to handle their daily operations, because you can imagine, you tap into the GPS system, you can really create chaos and havoc all around the world. So Schriever Air Force Base boasts that they have the world's largest military satellite constellation. Now, here's what that means. The GPS system is controlled by 32 satellites that are strewn all around planet Earth, and they're all communicating with each other, and the whole thing's moving through space along with Earth. And so they call this collection of 32 satellites a constellation. So they call it, it's constellation of satellites. It's like saying, well, we have a herd of this or whatever. Well, they have a constellation of satellites. And you can see why, because if you're standing on Earth and you look at this three-dimensionally, you have 32 points, like 32 stars. It's like a big constellation. And so what's really interesting is they talk about how that this constellation of 32 satellites, which are all working in tandem, that are all communicating with each other constantly, are all sort of like pieces of one big singular machine. You know, but that even though they may not be all physically connected, they're all working together. And so you can kind of see it as one big system. And that system is huge. They say that it is 50,000 kilometers in diameter. And now, to give you an idea of how big that is, I know here in the U.S. we don't talk so much about kilometers, we talk about miles. Well, that's over 31,000 miles. And to give you some comparison, Earth has a circumference of 24,901 miles. So this is much larger than the circumference of the Earth. So I'm going to stick with this figure 50,000 kilometers, since that's the term they're using in their scientific approach, and this is the term used in this article. So it says here, this is a 50,000 kilometer wide dark matter detector. Okay, huh? All right, so now this gets a little weird and complicated. So I want you to really think about what I'm saying. I'm going to talk about this as clearly as possible, but you'll need to use your imagination. So they're saying here, as New Scientist pointed out, that this network of satellites which is about 50,000 kilometers in diameter, is traveling through space along with the entire solar system at about 300 kilometers per second. So what that means is, as this system, which is around Earth, is moving through space, if it passes through some kind of a wave, a cosmic kink, a ripple in space-time, it will take a maximum of 170 seconds for that ripple to move across the entire network. And this is what they detect as time glitches. And they are interested in seeing if this could give us more evidence about dark matter. Now, of course, dark matter and dark energy constitutes over 95% of what scientists say is out there. And ironically, it's defined by the very fact that we don't know what it is. We cannot directly measure it. We can only indirectly measure it by the influence it makes on other things. And the idea behind dark matter is that there's not enough matter, enough visible matter in the visible universe to account for the way we see all of these cosmic bodies moving and behaving. And so they have to come up with something to fill in the blank, so they come up with this thing called dark matter. And so we don't know what it is, but we're always looking for the evidence of it. And we know that dark matter is something that has its own sense of gravity, and so it therefore distorts space and time, because gravity and space and time are all part of this big lens, if you will, that's always constantly shifting. So in other words, they're saying that as this system is passing through space, whenever it hits one of these kinds of waves or space-time anomalies or ripples, it actually will create glitches in the entire GPS system. Goes on to say here that it's as if we are all living inside an immersive, three-dimensional space-time instrument sloshing back and forth with 170-second long tides of darkness, okay? So again, you got to use your imagination and envision this constellation of satellites as all being part of a huge singular measuring device or measuring instrument. But here's where this gets especially interesting. He points out that as this system encounters these glitches in space-time, that there is a chain reaction of repercussions that actually manifests in the way we use GPS. So in other words, nowadays we construct massive things using information from the GPS system. So it could be a big facility, a tower, a bridge, a huge factory, an airport, train tracks, I mean, you know, whatever. All this stuff is relying upon GPS technology. And so if there is a time-space ripple that affects the way that that GPS technology is measuring things, then that is actually going to be incorporated into these physical structures as imperfections. So it's kind of like the idea that as above, so below. Like if something happens here in the GPS system that's a little off, you're going to find traces of it within the things that we create using GPS as a guideline. So they say, for example, sometimes if you're looking at some building, there might be a permanently inscribed element fossilized there from that moment in time, given the signals that were happening in space. That in some cases, we're not talking about some architectural error. We're talking about an error that records the signature. So the author here, he gives as an example of this a passage from a book called Earth's Magnetism in the Age of Sail by A.R.T. Donkers. And here is that passage. In 1904, a young American named Andrew Ellicott Douglas started to collect tree specimens. He was not seeking a pastime to fill his hours of leisure. His motivation was purely professional. Yet he was not employed by any forestry department or timber company, and he was neither a gardener nor a botanist. For decades, he continued to amass chunks of wood, all because of a lingering suspicion that a tree's bark was shielding more than sap and cellulose. He was not interested in termites or fungal parasites or extracting new medicine from plants. Douglas was an astronomer, and he was searching for evidence of sunspots. So the author goes on to say, imagine doing the same thing as this fella, Andrew Ellicott Douglas, but instead of collecting tree rings, you perform an ultra-precise analysis of modern megastructures that were built using machines guided by GPS. So you're not looking for lost details of architectural history, but you're looking for evidence of space weather inadvertently preserved in these titanic structures. So this is pretty astounding if you consider that these kinks, these defects that may be recorded in our environment are... Well, they begin with time-space anomalies, you see. And, you know, whether or not we're talking about looking at these giant physical structures that may have these little imperfections encoded in them that we can look back and then interpret as the state of time-space distortions at the time they were made, or look at this from the perspective of the fellow who's saying, look, there are these UFOs that are coming in and distorting this time-space medium. What we're really talking about here is the idea that time-space is not something that is some kind of theoretical thing that doesn't impact your life. We have now reached the point where we are starting to understand and comprehend space-time more, but also be able to measure it more, where we are truly opening our eyes to this new invisible dimension of information. And this is the next big scape for us to all begin to explore. I mean, I understand it's frustrating. I mean, it's like, for example, you know, when I went out and took tests all over the desert under many different conditions and only got one time anomaly, that was probably like the fact that one night I went out into the desert and I saw a really impressive lightning bolt strike at one point. And I guarantee you, if I went out the next night, I wouldn't have been able to document that lightning bolt striking again. It's like trying to predict when a rainbow will appear. Now, given enough time, eventually a lightning bolt will strike there again. But that's what it boils down to. This is like being in an ocean and trying to predict exactly when a certain wave is going to operate and pass through a certain area. And I'm sure that there are waves that are very predictable. We just don't know exactly where to look yet. But it's pretty darned amazing, isn't it, that you combine all this together and you consider that, yes, I went to a spot where I got an anomaly, and it also just happens to be a spot, as I found out later, where we have all this UFO footage being shot and close encounters happening. And so clearly it seems like there is something to learn from the fact that there are these time-space ripples that accompany all of this. And in fact, it's like the good news is we've opened our eyes to the idea that we are within this new medium with all of this new information that we can now start to record and discuss. But of course, the bad news is we're in a gigantic universe. There's a lot going on, and it's very difficult to predict when these things will happen. But given time, given persistence, we will document this, and we will start to see how the distortions in space-time created by UFOs or other paranormal experiences, you know, or paranormal events, you know, when people experience what they call ghosts or interdimensional beings or whatever, you'll start to see more and more about how all of this connects. And so our eyes are opening, in part because that we're able to think about this and talk about it on a larger scale, but also because we have more user-friendly technology like the DT meter that is making it easier for us to actually get out there and measure this stuff on a civilian basis and talk about it. And that's the direction that we're leaning in right now. So I hope you can see once again the connection between what I've measured and the connections that I'm finding and the, you know, all the things that are sort of clustered around my measurement, as well as what this fella is saying about, you know, UFOs creating a signature, a fingerprint, a footprint in the time space, and the reality that nobody can deny who's in the construction business, that GPS itself cannot work perfectly because the whole system is large enough to be influenced by these time-space imperfections. It shows you that there is no hard, fast, solid yardstick by which reality functions, that it is a sloshing, rippling thing, and that includes our own experience, because you can think of space being out there and your little life here in your kitchen and your living room being separate, but they're not. We're all integrated into the same system. And because that space-time is shifting and changing and warping, that means that your experience of reality itself, whether it be physical or mental, is also being shaped and sometimes, you know, determined and distorted by how these different types of ripples and glitches and patterns emerge. So, I'm going to post a link to this article I've been referencing on my Twitter account. And if you go to joshuapwarren.com, you'll find a nice little window there where you can read my tweets. You'll also find yellow letters at the top that say something like, Joshua is coming to Los Angeles. That's because I am. I'm doing a rare in-person workshop there in Los Angeles. Only 49 tickets total will be sold. And this is going to be an opportunity for us to get together and really get deep and think about a lot of cool stuff. And you'll meet very fascinating, interesting people. And we'll just hang out. So I hope you'll take advantage of it. Again, you'll see it says Joshua's coming to Los Angeles, or maybe it says Hollywood event or something along those lines. Click that link, and if it still lets you buy a ticket, then that means tickets are still available. Again, that's joshuapwarren.com. There is no period after the P. And you'll also find, of course, there a link to this podcast. It's called Joshua P. Warren Daily. It's always short. It's always free. You can subscribe through various means or just follow me on Twitter at Joshua P. Warren, at Joshua P. Warren, and I will tweet when a new one is available. So that's it for today. I'll have some more good stuff for you probably tomorrow. So thank you for listening. Thank you for your interest and support. Thank you for staying curious. And I will talk to you again soon.